Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 404, titled Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania, continuation of World War II. This program is being recorded on March 23rd of the year 2003, and as I'm speaking, the war in Iraq has now become active, I guess one could say. It was obviously intended for some time. We're going to talk about that, but even more, we're going to talk about other things relating to the Middle East and the Earth Island. First, however, let me remind you that there will be a detailed article-length description of For the Record Program 404 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website on at www.spitfirelist.com. The Spitfire website is also equipped with real audio. Radio stations that would like to play For the Record can get CDs or tapes for free from Spitfire. More about that later. Sister station WFMU-FM, the heroic WFMU, is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only on a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Again, For the Record 391, periodically updated, is the description for a summary analysis of the events in and around September 11th. And note that For the Record 305, about the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, now has supplemental text in which the meat of the book is now online. There's also a biography about Paul Manning, the heroic author of that book, that can be emailed around to people to inform them. Now, the title of this broadcast derives, and by the way, I will be covering a lot of ground relatively quickly. Check the other programs and the descriptions for these programs in order to fill in the detail for this admittedly very complex and ambitious broadcast. Now, the title, Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania, is indicative of a divide that I believe has taken place, a geopolitical divide, and I believe that not only the events of September 11th, but also the war in Iraq are part of this struggle. And I believe that, as I indicated in For the Record 401, the leaving aside the sincerity of people who are sincere in their desire for peace, and that's redundant, I think the motives of the French and German governments are absolutely cynical in connection with the Iraq war, as cynical as the Bush administration's motives are. And I believe that this is a geopolitical struggle, and one of the central elements of which is a recapitulation, a continuation of World War II, the struggle of the euro versus the dollar, an economic assault on the United States by the virtual state of the underground Reich. And again, I believe that Germania, states associated with or elements associated with Germany and the underground Reich, including France, are now engaged in a struggle with the United States and the United Kingdom. That is Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania. In For the Record 394, I detailed one of the most important aspects of the September 11th consideration, namely what I called the Battle of Menwith Hill. This was the German/EU attack on the consummately important NSA GCHQ facility at Menwith Hill in Yorkshire and the related Echelon network. By the way, the Echelon network allegedly involved in the recent arrest of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. August of 1998 was right after that attack began, when the European Parliament, rather, began attacking the Menwith Hill station. It was in that month that German intelligence had the September 11th cell in Hamburg under complete electronic and physical surveillance. It was in that month that Osama bin Laden stopped using his satellite phone. In that month was when the embassies in Africa, the U.S. embassies, were attacked. And I believe all of those events are related. In early August of 1998, I recorded For the Record program number 103, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, and in that broadcast, and again we're going back the better part of 5 years in time, I noted the EU/German attack on Men with Hill. I characterized it as an act of war, and subsequently supplemented that characterization by referring to it as the equivalent of Pearl Harbor. And I also cited the division that was then taking place between the Germans and related elements on one side and the United States and Great Britain on the other as Germania versus Anglo-Saxonia. What we're going to do now is to listen to an excerpt of For the Record program number 103 by way of introducing and underscoring this argument. Again, from FTR 103 from early August of 1998. This particular article is, as I said, a blockbuster, one of the most important articles I can recall seeing in recent years. It concerns a conflict between the EU, and between the lines I think we can safely read Germany, which dominates the EU, and the U.S. National Security Agency, which maintains an absolutely crucial strategic electronic listening post at Menwith Hill in Yorkshire. This particular listening post has been known for quite some time, but now the EU is making noise over this, and again, between the lines, I think it is very safe to say that the Germans are upset about the Menwith Hill listening post's capabilities for conducting industrial espionage, something the Germans do all the time. This is a very important article, and it is indicative of a redrawing of the battle lines of World War II. The top struggle in the world now is between the United States and Germany, and to a lesser extent, Great Britain and Germany, sort of Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania. And this attempt by the EU translate Germany to neutralize Menwith Hill is very close to being tantamount to an act of war against the United States. This article, again, is entitled EU Simmers Over Menwith Listening Post. It's by Simon Davies, subtitled Britain Faces a Major Security Battle in Brussels Over the Security Deal That Gives U.S. Spies Access to Sensitive Commercial Information. Skipping down in this article, which we began in our last half-hour segment and overlapping with the material that I dealt with there, whether the commercial espionage activities at Menwith Hill can be defined as, quote, security of general interest, unquote, will depend on a definition yet to emerge from the Commission. For Britain, this will be vitally important. If the NSA's activities are deemed to be of a general security nature, then Britain has fallen foul of its obligations under the treaty. But if those activities are not deemed to be security issues, then the special relationship between the UK and the US may have to be reviewed, since Britain might not be able to continue to offer the NSA the cloak of secrecy it has hitherto enjoyed. Either way, any referral on the matter by one country will put both Britain and America in a delicate diplomatic position. The Commission is also concerned that if the NSA issue escalates further, companies may demand protection. Title II, Article 3C of the treaty requires the creation of, quote, an internal market characterized by the abolition as between member states of obstacles to the free movement of goods, persons, services, and capital, unquote. The existence of a spy base on British soil could potentially act as an obstacle to the free movement of capital by interfering in delicate negotiations and transactions. However, a loophole in the European treaties could ensure that the British arrangement with America survives. In a provision engineered primarily by the UK, any bilateral arrangement between an EU and a non-EU country is exempt from intervention by Brussels or by other member states. The catch-22 is that Brussels cannot even read the special relationship agreements that form the basis of the NSA's tenure in Britain. The UK-USA agreement, which binds America and Britain to a joint signals intelligence arrangement, is unobtainable. A senior EU security official said, quote, I have never seen such a document, so I would not know how to assess the NSA situation, unquote. Well, again, the Menwith Hill listening post has been known for quite some time. It's something of an open secret. And I would state that, again, this is a terribly important article indicating the redrawing of the lines of power struggle in, on the global stage. It's no longer between the U.S. and the Soviets. It's now between the U.S. and the Germans. This is a terribly significant article. I would also point out that the dividing line between economic and strategic military intelligence is fine to the point of being virtually non-existent, particularly in the nuclear age. It is absolutely essential to monitor the international flow of key goods like ores, key alloys, petroleum, things like rolling stock, strategic materials such as uranium. It's all essential for adequate intelligence gathering. I would also add that it is in America's national interest to maintain this Men with Hill listening post. And that again from For the Record program number 103 from early August of 1998. By the way, the citation was from the Electronic Telegraph of the United Kingdom from July 16th of 1998. Now, continuing our discussion of Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania, which you first heard discussed in that segment. And again, if some of the things that I talk about sound weird or crazy, note the divide. Note where we have the United States and the United Kingdom basically in opposition to a group of countries, not only including some of the Middle Eastern countries, but in particular galvanized around the Franco-German axis. Bear in mind the German corporate control of corporate France. Also bear in mind Karl von Clausewitz's strategic equivalent of the theory of relativity, in which not E equals MC squared, but in which war equals diplomacy. Just as he said that war is the continuation of diplomacy by other means, so too the Franco-German axis, Germania, so to speak, has been waging diplomacy as a continuation of war by other means. That discussed in recent broadcasts. Now, note that Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania doesn't sound quite so crazy in 2003 as it might have in 1998. We are going to detail in the rest of our discussion in this broadcast elements of the underground Reich, that virtual state in the Middle East and in Europe, and in particular in the United States, as exemplified by the point, I believe to be the point element of the underground Reich, which is the Bush administration in this country out literally to subvert the United States and to annihilate it either economically and or politically, perhaps physically, and to deliver a subjugated or destroyed United States into the subservience of Germania, i.e. the underground Reich. More discussion of that in supplemental discussion of that in past broadcasts. Now, by way of illustrating the proxy war that I have discussed, the underground Reich as waging using Muslim and Arab peoples of the Earth Island as proxy warriors, note the following. Front page article from the San Francisco Chronicle of yesterday, March 22, 2003. This is an article by Alan Gathright, Gathright, headlined, Nine Arrested for Alleged Money Smuggling. And this deals with the Operation Green Quest Financial Task Force. Skipping down. The most fascinating case involved Shaheen Khalid Butt, a Pakistan native arrested late Thursday for laundering money, selling fake immigration papers, and skirting currency reporting laws from the Manhattan Foreign Exchange, an unlicensed money transfer firm he ran from the basement of the Kashmir restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. Three associates were also arrested. Skipping down. Note what this individual was apparently a member of. Pakistani press reported Butt has organized pro-separatist rallies outside the United Nations as president of the Kashmir Center and is a longtime friend of ousted Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. A 2001 United Nations conference on, quote, least developed nations, unquote, identified by a man by that name as a U.S. representative from the World Muslim Congress, a non-governmental organization. Note the Kashmiri activism. We're going to review some aspects of the World Muslim Congress that we've spoken about before. Yes, I know I've talked about this before for those who complain that I repeat items too often, but this sometimes is essential, I think, in order to tie some of the ends of this very complex web together. Turning once again to the book, The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, hardcover edition, copyright 1997 by Little Brown. Speaking of the WMC, the World Muslim Congress, and by the way here, the IHR is the Institute for Historical Review, that is the Nazi Liberty Lobby's Holocaust Denial Institution. Another favorite IHR speaker and collaborator was Ihsan Eklay of the World Muslim Congress, or WMC. Based in Pakistan, the WMC was initially headed by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who, like his friend H. Keith Thompson, stood by the Third Reich until his death in 1974. A few years later, the WMC, or World Muslim Congress, then headed by Pakistani Dr. Inamullah Khan, mailed Holocaust denial literature to every member of the U.S. Congress and the British Parliament. The WMC's official mouthpiece, Muslim World, carried ads for the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and Henry Ford's The International Jew. Dr. Khan's Congress also published Freemasonry, a book warning that Jews were using lodge members to extend secret control over religion and society, a paranoid theory that has long been popular among Liberty Lobby supporters and neo-Nazi groups around the world. Acknowledging their political kinship, WMC Secretary General Khan sent a letter to the Spotlight praising its, quote, superb in-depth analysis, unquote, and stating that the paper deserved, quote, the thanks of all right-minded people, unquote. Dr. Khan also served as an advisor to the Saudi Arabian royal family, which lavished funds on the WMC. In addition, the Saudi Arabian government retained the services of American neo-Nazi William Grimstead as a Washington lobbyist. Like many European neo-fascist groups, the WMC adopted a third position stance toward the superpowers, as demonstrated by this headline from Muslim World. U.S. and USSR both serve Zionist interests. But Khan tempered his anti-American tirades when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979. Soon, the World Muslim Congress began working closely with U.S. intelligence and Pakistani military officials who were covertly supporting the Afghan Mujahideen in their fight against the Soviet-installed regime in Kabul. This effort was strongly endorsed by Dr. Khan, who served for many years as the Pakistani representative of the Nazi-infested World Anti-Communist League, which played an important role in the Reagan administration's, quote, secret war, unquote, in the Golden Crescent. Wackel, we've spoken about, and among other programs, for the FTR 367. The Grand Mufti is a name that should be well known to regular listeners. Key Axis operative, major in the SS, recruiter of Muslim formations for the Waffen-SS. The first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, Yasser Arafat, is his distant cousin by marriage and his protege. By way of tying things together for many, many years, and there's an old French expression, la plus ça change, la plus c'est la même chose. This is an excerpt from the book Cairo to Damascus by John Roy Carlson, the author of the, at the time, very well-known Undercover, the account of his infiltration of the fascist underground in the United States. And speaking of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the World Muslim Congress, and notes Mr. Boot's activism on behalf of Kashmir, as well as his representation of the WMC in the United States, speaking of the Grand Mufti, in February of 1951, he suddenly reappeared in Karachi, Pakistan, to meet old friends who had supported his cause in Iraq and to preside over a 12-day World Muslim Congress. In a typical inflammatory address, he called for a full struggle, unquote, by the Muslims, again quoting, to meet the aggressor, meaning in this instance the non-Muslim Hindus of India. He assured the delegates, quote, we shall meet next with sword in hand on the soil of either Kashmir or Palestine, unquote. Either Kashmir or Palestine, again, sounding remarkably contemporary. That book published in 1952, relating an account from 1951. Now, what we're going to look at next is a very important article, some of the very best work detailing, by the way, the struggle for the Earth Island, as the Nazis called it. By the way, note the reference there to Iraq. As we've spoken about in many programs, the anti-British uprising led by Ali Rashid and the Grand Mufti had as one of its supporters Khairullah al-Tufa, the uncle, the maternal uncle and political mentor of Saddam Hussein, and it was Khairullah al-Tufah who founded and headed up Saddam Hussein's biological warfare program that was titled the Directorate of Veterinary Affairs. And later on in the broadcast, I'm going to touch on the working hypothesis that underlies the work on September 11th and related events. As I've said before, I believe that at one level, this is a struggle, a geopolitical and economic struggle between the dollar and the euro, Iraq having denominated, becoming the first OPEC country to denominate its oil in euros rather than dollars. The Bush administration, I suspect, is utilizing this war to a large extent as its as the re-election campaign. There are a great many unanswered questions about September 11th. But in terms of analyzing what is going on, any hypothesis must be able to accurately and adequately account for all observed phenomena, and the affinity, the alliance between the U.S. and Tony Blair is not because of oil. I suspect that the foot-and-mouth outbreak in the United Kingdom was actually the product of Iraqi or slash underground Reich Islamo and or Arabo fascist terrorism. Note that the United Nations had in its report had stated that Iraq had foot-and-mouth as part of its BW arsenal. Their program was called the Directorate of Veterinary Affairs, anthrax being a and foot and mouth disease both being diseases of cattle. And the strain that broke out in the United Kingdom was the South Asia strain, which had never been seen in Europe. It is native to Pakistan, India, and the Middle East. I've talked about that in For the Record program number 379. I've spoken about it in For the Record program 287 and 295, among other broadcasts. So again, note the Grand Mufti's participation with Iraq. Note also the Third Reich heritage to a certain extent of the Ba'ath Party. Now, jumping to the United States, some of the most important work on the September 11th money trail has been done by Glenn R. Simpson of the Wall Street Journal, and a true hero, somebody whose name deserves to be hailed alongside the names of people like Paul Manning, the heroic Paul Manning, the heroic James Stewart Martin, and John Loftus, the author of The Ballara Secret, co-author of Unholy Trinity and other books, and The Secret War Against the Jews, filed a lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian, a professor at South Florida University. Al-Arian is a Palestinian-American. His case has been hailed as one of persecution of Palestinian Americans by the U.S. authorities, et cetera, et cetera. And interestingly enough, Sami Al-Arian has become a hero to the so-called progressive sector. As always, note the use of the term so-called. Sami Al-Arian is a hero to a lot more than the progressive sector. He's a hero to the Bush administration and a close associate of the Republican Party. And it was John Loftus's lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian, which acquired documentation which submitted to the law enforcement and intelligence establishment of this country, led to the all-important March 20th, 2002 Green Quest raids that I think are consummately important for understanding September 11th, and which, if properly followed up, would not only help to crack Al-Qaeda, but which would send George Bush's administration and the Republican Party packing, because indeed, if this were followed up, this would prove that, in fact, George Bush is a traitor and should be impeached, if not executed by a military firing squad. That, however, would be up to the appropriate authorities of jurisprudence. But note the following article. In consideration of the Operation Green Quest raids and the Sami Al-Arian case, and we'll get to that in just a second, some of the other really, really good work on September 11th is being done by writers for Newsweek magazine, specifically Mark Hosenball and Michael Isikoff. This is from Newsweek of March 24th of 2003. This is titled Al-Qaeda's Money Man, and note in connection with Germania versus Anglo-Saxonia that it was the vitally important Echelon network which apparently led to the arrest of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Even more importantly, perhaps, is the fact that in addition to Sheikh Mohammed, a key money man for al-Qaeda got popped at the same time. This article, Al-Qaeda's Money Man, from Newsweek of 3/24/2003, it's by Mark Hosenball and Michael Isikoff. It reads in part, when Pakistani agents burst into a Rawalpindi apartment earlier this month and hauled away Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they could hardly believe their good luck. Not only had they finally nabbed one of the most sought-after al-Qaeda fugitives, the mugshot of the suspected 9/11 mastermind, eyes dazed, hair askew, became an instant icon, but the apartment itself was filled with incriminating computer files and documents. As it turned out, their luck was just beginning. The authorities also arrested another man in the apartment, a 34-year-old Saudi they couldn't immediately identify. It wasn't until the next day that they discovered he was Mustafa Ahmed al-Hassawi, another most wanted Qaeda terrorist believed to be one of the 9/11 plot's key paymasters, unquote. Officials tell Newsweek that Mohammed al-Hassawi are both under intense interrogation, possibly at the U.S. air base in Bagram, Afghanistan. If they talk, the men could provide answers to many key questions about the September plot that investigators have yet to figure out. Whose idea was it, who issued the go-ahead, and who supplied the money to finance the attacks? That last puzzle is especially important since it could help authorities unravel the all-important worldwide network of wealthy individuals, charities, and governments that enable Osama bin Laden to make his deadly fantasies come true. On Saturday, authorities scored another victory, arresting Abu Jazir al-Jaziri, described by intelligence sources as a, quote, an important al-Qaeda figure, unquote, who handled logistics. Few people know more about the cash end of the business than al-Hassawi, skipping down. That the account was flush with cash. That was an account of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Not long after al-Hassawi opened it, someone made a series of deposits, including $102,000. Intelligence sources say al-Hassawi, who comes from a well-off Saudi family, may have put up some of the money himself. Al-Hassawi's work wasn't done. According to internal FBI reports obtained by Newsweek 2 weeks after al-Hassawi opened the account, he, or someone using his cell phone number, wired $15,000 to Hamburg, Germany. The person who went to collect the money was Ramzi bin al-Shib, an alleged top 9/11 plotter who was captured last September. Within days, officials say, bin al-Shib wired $14,000 to Zaharias Moussaoui in the United States, skipping down. Wading through the cache of evidence found at the apartment has been slow and difficult, but U.S. officials say they have classified evidence linking al-Hassawi to other terrorist plots. Al-Hassawi, a key al-Qaeda money man, and we're going to link speculate about a possible link between the arrest of al-Hassawi in Pakistan and some events which took place in the U.S. shortly thereafter. But that's going to wait for side two of the program. All of For the Record programs being archived on Real Audio by WFMU. Recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older shows at a longer URL for download only, linked to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website, and also to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com. The For the Record section of the Spitfire website will have an article-length detailed description of this broadcast within a week or so of the airing of the program. Spitfire provides tapes or CDs to radio stations for free. Spitfire is at SpitfireList.com. Summary analysis of September 11th, For the Record 391, periodically updated. Biography of Paul Manning in About Paul Manning, and The Meat of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile in FTR 305, available for dissemination on the web. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 404, Anglo-Saxonia versus Germania, a continuation of World War II, being recorded on March 23rd of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.